I'm not in it to be liked, okay? Like, I don't care. I don't. I do. We all want to be loved. But as far as acting and a character goes, I never approach a character or anything with the idea of I hope someone likes me.
Welcome to Let's Play by the Gamers, a podcast hosted by actress Kylie Vernoff. Fans know Kylie best as the fiery Susan Grimshaw in Red Dead Redemption 2 and Miranda Cowan in GTA 5. Our series features some of the most informed and exciting people in the gaming industry today. Kylie and her guests discuss careers, gaming, and so much more. If you like what you hear, be sure to check out thegamers.com website to hear exclusive bonus material from each of our guests.
Hey everybody, welcome to part one of our special two-part finale. In this bonus episode, I had the honor and deep pleasure of chatting with my old friend, the ridiculously talented, charismatic, and incredibly popular Steven Ogg. Of course, gamers know Steve best as Trevor Phillips in GTA 5. Steve's portrayal of Trevor was critically acclaimed, and he received numerous award nominations as a result. But he's maybe even more widely recognized these days for his exceptional work in the massive TV hits The Walking Dead, Westworld, and the just-released Snowpiercer. A little heads up, Steve is pretty busy these days, so this interview took place on the fly and without the benefit of studio equipment. So please forgive us the occasional mic interference. And one more thing, there's some naughty language in this episode. And when I say some, I mean a lot, so be warned. Okay, that's it from me. Let's hear from Mr. Ogg.
Interesting day. We shall leave it at that, because otherwise it could fill a day. How are you?
I'm good. I am just so delighted that you are available to do this with me today. I'm just absolutely tickled.
I have to say it's been, yes, I too. And I have friends that have done these podcasts, these things that the kids call the podcast, and I've never done one. And interestingly enough, I've done two. This is my second podcast this week. How crazy is that?
That's amazing. That is crazy. What was the do you want to tell me what the other one was, or how it went for you?
Well, I cycled there. It was a director and a filmmaker that did a friend's film called The Maestro that we had been introduced months ago. And he just happened to email me as I was back in LA. And I said, I'm actually here for like a week because fucking shooting an ensemble show sucks balls and I don't work. So money means nothing. So work means everything. And when there's no work, it equals two negatives and sucks balls. So I come back to LA for a week. He emails me. I go there 2.5 hours.
What? That's crazy.
And out of that 2.5 hours, I would say, and they watched everything I'd ever done.
Wow.
But we literally talked for 30 minutes about work. In the business.
Wow.
Just a heads up. So you might want to say shut up or we're talking about this. Because honestly, I did not. I think the first hour was talking about, I think I had a really big cry that morning. So I was talking about crying and emotion and what emotion is and whether it applies to acting and whether it really fucking matters at all.
Yeah.
What kind of state you're in, into the work. But it was pretty much talking about, emotion, spirituality, and stuff for probably 2 hours before I think they were like, maybe we should talk a little about the work. And I was like, fine, we can, but it's kind of like a fart in the wind, man. Work is a fart in the wind. It just comes, it goes, it really means nothing. So what means something? The interaction you just had, the tear you just shed, the love you just felt, whatever it was. So how are you?
I'm good. I've done a couple of these podcasts too as a guest now, and I find it to be really, like you said, I find that it's a nice personal way to sort of tell your story and what matters to you, sort of similarly to what you were just saying. You can really, you know, talk about what matters to you. So yeah, I like it, and I'm thrilled to get into this with you. So let's get right into it if you feel ready. Although I'm already recording, truth be told.
Oh well, yeah. Fuck. Then you might want to cut out the beginning part.
Well.
Although I asked the last one. I was like, "At what point did you start recording?" And they're like, "Well, it's kind of as soon as you sat down." I was like, "Well, fuck me. We might want to look at editing." And they're like, "Well, we'll take out anything you want." And I was like, "I don't fucking care, because honestly, I'm just a big open sore of a human being, so it doesn't matter." But that's up to you, because like I told them, what I tell you, I tell my friend this afternoon, I tell my therapist last week, I tell my mom tomorrow. I'm pretty much the same fucking person in whatever circumstance, for better or for worse.
I love that about you. And I think, you know, it's interesting. I've been watching a lot of your work recently in the last couple of days, preparing to talk to you on this podcast. And it's been so much fun for me to just watch you work and see how it's evolved. And what's amazing to me is how you bring your whole self to everything. But I want to talk about that a little later. I want to start out. So first of all, you know, everyone should know that you and I have known each other for about, I think it's 8,500 years. Is that right?
I believe it was when I remember there was dinosaurs roaming around, and I was like, hey, and T-Rex crossed their path, and you were sort of behind the thick part of the tail, just before it gets to the thin, wispy part of the tail.
And
you were behind it. And I said, watch out, because I thought the T-Rex was going to turn and its little tail would fucking whack yourself and just send you flying. And I think that was the initial greeting, which I don't know. I think that was more than, was that billions of years ago or millions?
It may have been billions of years ago, but I remember I still have the scar from that fucking dinosaur tail.
Was it Alan Savage?
Yes. Yes, I do think that that's where we met. I think we met in Alan's class. So, but before that, I want to ask you just like the basics, because there's stuff that I know about you and I know really well about you. And then there's the stuff that I don't know. So can I start from the beginning with you?
So I should let you essentially guide this and not be a control freak and just take over with anecdotes or useless fucking things that I have to say?
Actually, dude, I'd be so grateful for anecdotes. So jump in anytime you want an anecdote.
Okay.
Is that a verb? Can you anecdote as a verb? I think you can.
Anecdotally?
I'm going to anecdote all over this. Okay. So you are from Calgary. Yeah. Is that right?
Correct. And we should preface, because I know when you're about to ask things,
yeah,
and having done, as you know, when you do a lot of press or when you do, here goes the anecdotes. When you do a lot of, these fucking things and not even like, it's not like I do a lot of press. I'm not working all the time. At all. I just work in bits and pieces, and I'm on large projects that then everyone says I'm working all the time. But point being, you know, when you're on these press things and people ask questions, and I tend to, which I have gotten in trouble for, not in trouble, but told don't, is I kind of lie a lot.
You do?
Yeah, well, just in these things, like, because especially like, Walking Dead, Westworld, Snowpiercer,
yeah,
projects I work on are either you can't talk about or they don't want you to talk about.
Yeah.
So it becomes like, I remember in Germany doing the Walking Dead press stuff where, you know, we were doing a few places, but I remember in Germany in particular, because I kept talking about various things that they would write down furiously. Like I was like, oh, this season's nuts. It's sort of like, have you seen Narcos? Do you have Narcos here? It's kind of like Narcos meets the X-Files. There's aliens and drug smuggling. And so, of course, everyone, like Austin and Alana was there. I forget who else in the cast was there. Everyone's looking at me like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I'm just, because it's so ridiculous that you're giving press when you can't say anything. So I'm like, you know what? Let's have fun. because we might die tomorrow, so let's enjoy ourselves. And so I go on these rants about certain things, which I did recently with Snowpiercer in San Diego Comic-Con. And everyone looks at me like, shut up. But also at the same time, I'm like, well, I can't say anything anyway. So what are we going to talk about? No one's going to talk about anything meaningful. So I might as well have fucking fun.
Yeah.
And because of that, I lie a lot. Like my birthday is a lie. Apparently I said November at some point, so I get my birthday wishes in November. It's not my birthday in November, but thank you.
When is your birthday? Are we willing to tell the truth today with your old friend Kylie?
It's in May.
Oh, well, happy birthday.
Thanks. So I'm just prefacing that because I'm curious now to hear your questions, because yeah, I'm always interested what one pulls up and what is... I've actually, on some interview, I played like lie versus, you know, lie versus truth. But anyways, so.
I have an idea. So if I ask you about something and you don't want to tell the truth, you just go ahead and lie and we'll just go with it.
No one will know anyways. I could have just been lying this entire time and my birthday really is in November and everything I've said is bullshit. That's what's fun about this.
Mm-hmm. I like
but that. I should keep in mind that I actually give a shit about you. Not that I don't give a shit about anyone else. I care too much is my problem. But I'm less likely to lie to you.
Yeah. Yeah, I have great affection for you too. But I don't mind a little white lie, especially if it makes it interesting. So how about if I think I've caught you in a lie, I'll say so.
Like, is that really true?
I'm like, that's not my memory.
Because okay, you do know personal stuff about me that could, in fact, inform whether or not you think that's true. But anyways, I digress, or I maybe digress. Okay, go.
Okay, you are from Calgary, correct? Yes.
Born in Edmonton, Calgary. Yes, Calgary raised.
Okay, so. And you did all your schooling there, like all the way through high school?
All the way through high school, went into the University of Calgary for 1 year. And then I during the summer hiatus, I had an opportunity. I left and I never went back.
Okay, I'm going to ask you about that opportunity. I don't know if this is what I'm thinking about, but I remember when we met, hearing a story from you that you had been in Europe, and I think it was with some supermodel that you were either training or, is this right? Am I onto something?
Yeah.
So what were you, is that the opportunity that took you out, or was it an acting thing? Were you already acting by that?
I had acted as a child. In Calgary, I was, I did theater growing up.
Me too.
And I also did, because again, with these interviews and press things, and I share some of them with my mother, and my mother is the one to say, that's not true. Because I sometimes think I make things up in my head as a survival mechanism or as a narrative that is actually not true. Mm-hmm. But I started doing impressions of Betty Boop in Eugene Cost Elementary School during class or school assemblies, whatever that was. I don't know what a school assembly was. It was a principal talking. I guess maybe people sang.
Uh-huh.
And I dressed up in drag doing Betty Boop for a bit.
How old were you at this point? Was this like a childhood thing, teenager thing?
Well, no, I mean, elementary school. So we're talking... It was before grade 5, so it was probably grades, I don't know, what, 2 to 5? So what is that, 8, 7, 6?
Yeah.
So why am I dressing in drag? Why am I doing Betty Boop? None of it makes any fucking sense. But there I was doing that. And then I did theater. And then I started to get into, I kind of did theater all along. And I did sports kind of too. So I was always this character in junior high
what kind of sports did you do?
In junior high it was sort of everything. It was basketball, it was track and field, it was Well, that wasn't everything. It was basketball, probably volleyball, track and field, those kind of things. But I was also acting at the same time. Right. So, and I had a mohawk because my mother's British. So I was going to England for the summer and listening to a lot of goth music and Bauhaus and the Smiths and wearing winkle picked. They're basically pointy-toed shoes that the mods would wear with zippers across the top of them. Like, I was kind of...
I know what you're talking about, but I've never heard that word, winkle picker.
Winkle pickers.
Winkle pickers.
Which sounds like a wonderful fairy that comes during the night and cleans out the snot from your nose.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not.
Okay, but it's a shoe. I think I know what the shoe is, with the zippers, like the cool kids wore.
Well, the cool kids in London in the 80s. So I sort of had that going on. And then, so I was this sort of bizarre, and this isn't, Calgary is a very, was a very, you know, the conservative, if you will, city. So, you know, small town then. So what do you do with a guy that looks like a mohawk, but also can run fast? The teachers, I had an attitude, so the teachers didn't really like me, yet I also got the best marks in class because I loved academia and knowledge and learning and writing. So I had that, but I was also this, and then I was also a runner, then I was also theater. So I never fit in. I was attracted to, we called them the headbangers. Those were the people that would smoke at the back doors with lumberjack jackets, listening to, I guess at the time, what, Skid Row, Motley Crue.
Yeah, we called them headbangers too in upstate New York.
Oh, you did?
Yep.
Oh, beautiful.
Called them too. Yep.
I thought that was a very Canadian term.
Headbangers, burnouts too.
So there were those. So I never, basically the point being, if there is a point at all to anything I say, is that I didn't fit in. So I continued to do theater until I kind of got more into volleyball. I decided, because a mentor that was kind of a my inspiration in a sense, he was a drama teacher in Calgary. I never studied drama, but he died, which in Calgary, when I was whatever age, hearing that news, he died of pneumonia. Which I don't know how old I was, 16, 17. Again, this is where the lies, not even the lies start, but I don't have a good concept of time or numbers. I am just not that, that's not my mindset. But I do remember my mom coming in and saying, Peter Spear has died. And of what? Pneumonia. Who the fuck dies of pneumonia? Well, As you get older and the years go by, you realize that that was the beginning of it, the AIDS.
Yeah.
But you're in fucking Calgary and you're a teenager or just past teenage years. It had an enormous impact that really kind of exploded a world I was in, and then had me going, I can't be a Renaissance man anymore. It's serving no purpose. I'd rather be great at one thing than good at a lot of things. Let me just do volleyball. Let me be a jock. Let me define myself by, look at my muscles. Look how high I can jump. I can pound a volleyball into your face. It became sort of this moment of, let me define myself, which I did.
Well, and I like that those are very objective things, right? So the Renaissance man stuff is sort of, it's out there, it's hard to define, but when you can see yourself getting stronger, you can see yourself hitting a ball really hard, it's easier to define who you are with those objective skills, right?
Well, an objective skill is like, you know, a therapist, psychologist, anyone you work with. I'm, you know, listen, I'll talk, as you can already see. Thank you. Thank you. Sir, I'm having eggs delivered right now. Country eggs. Thank you. Not delivered like I order country eggs, but my neighbor here has said her mother had a bunch of eggs and she's now delivering them. So anyways, thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah, eggs, yummy. the objectiveness of like when you work with anyone is like, I'm always like, give me something tangible,
yeah,
which is what sports are. Like, tell me to do, stand on my right leg and do 50 fucking calf raises every day. And then you'll see by week number six that your right calf is really is larger because you've worked on it every day. And, you know, acting to me is also very athletic in that if you do something every day, if you're not getting better and stronger, something's fucking wrong, because you should be. If you're not working on yourself every day, challenging yourself every day and not getting better, I just don't understand that. I can't comprehend that. You should be getting better if you're putting in the work every day. Mm-hmm. So that's where, yes, objectively and also the tangibility, if you will. I don't know if tangibility is a word, but I'll make it one.
I think it is. Tangibility of the sports. You can see your improvement. You can see your success. It's something you can quantify.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that moment sort of brought me into it. And so coming back to answering your question, which is like, again, the longest response time ever question, is the fact that, so I had an opportunity when I was with volleyball. What happened is it kind of was making its run. And I was at a point where I'd stopped acting and doing theater, if you will. And I realized doing club volleyball, going into university, I had an accident prior to returning that broke my finger. And I think it hurt my arm as well. Mm-hmm. And despite all of that, I knew in university I was always going to be behind Andy Cameron and Bruce Edwards. They were a year ahead of me. They were already, you know, either on or going to be on the national team. They were taller than me. They were better than me. I was the runt of the team. So I always knew entering into that first year of university that I had 4 years of being on the bench. I would never be better than them. It didn't even matter if I was better than them. I would never start. I would always be on the bench and come in when I was needed. And I don't like being, not a team player, but I kind of want to be the star.
Yeah.
That's my mentality. So all of this came at a time when then I had an opportunity in Calgary. Kelly Striet had a modeling agency. I had gone to... Oh, this was in club. This was even before. So this was before first year university. I went to the Calgary Herald, the local newspaper, because they were doing an article called Best Buns in the food section, being best buns being like bread. Best buns being the best, like the best baking recipes for bread.
Okay.
Now, they asked at that point, I think it was my club coach, Raisa, like you have a volleyball team, you have a men's volleyball team. So who has the best ass on your team? She said I did. That was, I guess, the name put out there. I got a good bum. Uh-huh. Which, ironically enough, to keep tying things in, growing up in Calgary, I was pretty much chased and not beaten up regularly, but certainly roughed up and certainly chased.
Yeah, I'll say that I had experiences being bullied in Utah. And I think that sometimes when you live somewhere that is so homogenous, people will look for anything different about you to point out and make fun of, because within that homogeny, who are you going to bully?
I was for being different, which I also was in going back to junior high school, not being a jock. I mean, right. You know, and again, I'm so not the one for political correctness in this age. I'm much more prone like to be in the 70s or something. So the jocks knew me as like this, you know, you're a theater blankety blank. Mm-hmm. The theater people were like, you're a jock. So I never, you know, it ties into this whole Calgary thing of I was never feeling like I fit in anywhere. Then with this Best Buns thing, go to, you know, they want to take a picture of someone's bum in jeans with breadsticks.
Oh, Steve.
Coming out of the pocket. I was going to say coming out of the ass, but then that's a different publication. And that's not one I did.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the Calgary Herald. It was a picture of some, you know, someone's bum in denim jeans with breadsticks with Best Buns on the food section. So I go to do that as like, you know, at this point I'm like 200 pounds, maybe. I'm like muscle short jock. I'm jock now. I'm jock guy.
You're a volleyball guy.
Mm-hmm. I'm volleyball guy. I got my, probably had my like University of Calgary dinosaur, you know, jacket on. I'm like, yo, I'm not sure why I spoke like kind of a stereotypical Italian, but apparently I did.
Yeah.
I went in. At that point, this Cali guy was there. He said, oh, are you, as I left, are you here for a modeling gig? I was like, modeling, what? Again, feeding into the stereotype of how a jock talks.
You're a caveman. Yeah, now I know you're caveman. Italian guy, now you're caveman.
Yeah. What speak of you when you speak like this? He said, well, I'd love to take some pictures of you.
Okay, yes.
It was quite weird. And so before I knew it, I was having pictures of me taken outside without a shirt. And then they were sent to Toronto. And basically, so that's what began. Then there was someone in Toronto that wanted me to come to do, you know, swimsuit and underwear things or whatever that was. Modeling, if that was to call it. I never considered myself to be a model. It was more like, okay, yeah, I had a good body, so.
And that brought you to Europe? Is that what brought you to Europe before I met you in Alan's class, right? Hadn't you spent some time there? Uh-huh. Okay.
And that's what took me there to do fashion shows. I never ended up really modeling. I ended up, you know, dating a model. I ended up going back to that. I ended up sort of doing those years that I spent, the 5 years before. So I was there for about 5 years before coming to New York, were my, I call them my Buster Keaton Dostoevsky travels.
I love it.
It was me writing. It was me being an artist. It was me. I did a lot of, you know, in Paris, I was like, I wanted to live in Henry Miller's place in Montmartre. I thought it would help me write. I'd sleep on streets in my leather pants in Paris, thinking it would infuse my writing. Because at this point, I'm just writing now. And I'm just like, I'm an artist. And a Purell artist at best, which is obviously when we are young, we have the belief we must suffer to be an artist.
Yeah.
Especially with the people I had, the writers or the playwrights or whatever that I enjoyed were generally those that suffered. So thus began my years in Europe. And yes, that's what took me there. But I ended up, you know, doing training, personal training to sort of the new batch of supermodels, to Tyra Banks and Rebecca Romijn and Shiraz and all these people that became supermodels that also, of course, then went into acting, which was always like...
Most of them went into acting, right?
Yes. And they all, of course, succeeded. I hate the word success. They all began working and getting their own shows within a year. Which, of course, to someone who's like, who's actually put in the time as an actor who returned to acting, was always very, fuck you, beautiful people. Like, fuck off. Like, you know, I get it. You're beautiful. And some of them, you know, I'm not talking about the names I just mentioned. Some are great. And you're born how you're born. You look a certain way. But fuck me. I'm like,
yeah, but, well, and name recognition. They got some name recognition for modeling. And then, you know, the business rewards that. They think, well, you'll bring eyes on what we're doing.
It doesn't hurt to be beautiful.
No, that is true. So, okay, so good. So I knew that was true. And so then I met you in Alan's class, which I was just trying to remember what that was like. And I remember it just being this really heady time in his little living room and just really for me, I think I really learned how to speak my truth in that room. He would never let me get away with anything. I don't know what your memories of that class are, but.
Well, you, I mean, you remember who was in that class, right? Like there was Garrett Dillahunt.
Oh, I didn't realize he was in that class.
Who I'm now, you know, I've obviously reconnected with through The Walking Dead and Fear of the Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. Garrett was in that. Norm Lewis.
Yeah, Norm was in it. And Alton Fitzgerald. And yeah, there was some. And Kim Cattrall I worked with a lot in that class.
Kim Cattrall and I spoke about doing Miss Julie at one point.
Wow, that would be incredible. Yeah, she was really good. She was really good and hardworking.
Well, I always found, didn't you find that there was this whole joke going on in Alan's class of like there was the Broadway people versus the real actors?
Mm-hmm. there were all these Broadway people, and then there were people who weren't acting at all. Like there were a couple guys in there that were cops in Westchester that just kind of wanted to try it out. And
yeah,
I loved that about it though.
And weren't you always wondering where's the bed? Where's the other bed?
where do they sleep?
Right. It was weird. It was like a total New York. And I used to, I mean, you know, talk about, listen, I, you know, when I first started there, I was living on Christopher Street, and I used to walk in the dead of winter from Christopher and the West Side Highway up to, Alan was on like 73rd and 2nd or whatever it was, something like
that. Yeah. Somewhere up there.
Right. It was up there. I used to walk in winter with my Discman in the snow, listening to Howard Stern, going, walking, so that at that time it was, you know, the $1.50 or whatever.
Yeah.
I was like, so the $1.50 I saved would go towards a coffee and a bagel, so I would look fucking cool sitting in the 8:30 a.m. class.
Yeah, we were all so broke. I remember asking, do you remember James Villemaire? He was in that class. And
God, what happened to James?
I don't know. I saw him in something maybe a few years ago. I think he still works, but he was another Canadian, right? Also Canadian. And I remember asking him to buy me a cup of coffee once because I was just dead broke and it was so cold outside. And I had, again, I was walking. And I was like, any chance I'll pay you back to buy me a cup of coffee.
Paige Turco, remember Paige?
Totally remember Paige because we were with the same agent and
Gersh.
Yeah, we were there together.
She did NYPD Blue.
Yeah, she did a lot of stuff. She was a good actor too. That's what was so interesting about Alan was that everyone who was in there had to put in the work, right? I mean, we can talk about how it doesn't hurt to be beautiful, and Kim Cattrall is certainly beautiful, and you know, but. But everyone who was there really wanted to get better at acting. We all really wanted to get better at acting, whether people were on Broadway or, you know, signed with Gersh or cops in Westchester. What were they doing? I'm still trying to figure that out.
I don't know. But it was funny because I mentioned this other podcast I did this week, being a podcast week, apparently, for me. The one thing I didn't like, because it did make you focus on, like, he used to sometimes break it up into a sentence or two. And it was like, you could never get into a flow.
Mm-hmm. That's true. You're right about that. I forgot that. He'd make you say the same sentence over and over until he believed you.
Yeah. And it does. I mean, listen, it's all about getting behind what you say and conviction, because sometimes people even don't know what makes a good actor. You know, I'm not talking about they're beautiful or they're gorgeous. I'm talking about why do I as an audience member resonate with a certain performance? I'm not talking about, like, I don't know. My sensibilities are much different, I think, than a lot of people's. But, you know, you could say, like, let's say something recent, like Joaquin Phoenix in The Joker. Great performance, right? He does a great job at that. Not necessarily a performance like that, but on a simplistic, basic level of why someone gravitates and enjoys someone's work, I feel can be broken down a lot of times. Take away the showmanship, take away Daniel Day-Lewis looking like Lincoln, looking like Bill the Butcher, looking like this, strip it all away. And I think the basic thing that people don't maybe realize or understand, and it might be an unconscious thing, is because the basic, the fundamental thing, which Alan Savage did teach by repeating one line over and over is just fucking say that, like, can, like, be behind what you're saying. Basically ask the question, and if you're not asking it, then answer it. And that's what it is. It's fucking communicating that line. And if you're not behind it, and that's definitely what Savage got, I got from that whole experience, fucking be behind what you're saying.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. And people, I think, that maybe don't go that deep or don't need to, it's just, why does this resonate? Well, you know why? Because you're behind what you're fucking saying. That's what I like to do.
Yeah. And I have to tell you that I've been, as we prepare to have this conversation today, talking to people who are either fans of shows you're on or who know you. And over and over, what I hear from people is that your level of commitment makes you so compelling that they are these huge fans. They want to watch everything you do. And I mean, I was watching this scene that you were doing on The Walking Dead, which I had really never watched just because it hadn't really crossed my viewing path. So I was watching some of your stuff, and there was this moment where you came into this, get this doctor and get him to leave. And the doctor says something like, why does he need two doctors? And you make like five different faces at him, leading him. And I was leaning towards my screen, following your eyebrows and then the sort of tilt of your head. And then you say, I think my look may have conveyed the information. And I burst out laughing because it absolutely happened. And I so admire your willingness to take up space when you walk on a set.
But that's also work. Like, people sometimes think that that's me being like having a big ego. And like, I'm the first one to admit, like I said, at the beginning, I think it was, I don't know what day, today's Thursday. So Wednesday or Tuesday, whenever that podcast was, like that morning, I was in tears. I was bawling. I was inconsolable. I was just, I didn't, and I'm not, like, I know depression, I know anxiety, I suffer from fucking both, and I'm not shy about it, I think my Instagram has become sort of this gallery of, that I put on the wall emotionality, and I leave the room, I don't engage, but I'm saying, hey, we're all in this together, we're all one. But that cocksure, peacocking character, that people tend to like draw a through line between, you know, the character in GTA, the video game, to the character in The Walking Dead. These characters I get that people then sort of, well, assume that that's you. You're this cocky, peacocking motherfucker who can do five expressions and then say, well, it's my face, give it away. That's work. That takes work to get there, to be that person. That's not me. Yes, I have an ego. That's why I fucking survived all these years. And I'm not 6 feet under.
Let me say this. And one of the things I find so fascinating, Steve, is that you do play these bad guys. And not always, but you have played some of these iconic bad guys. And yet your fans... And you have a lot of female fans. I mean, besides just the fact that you're a great actor, what I think draws people into these villains that you play is not the cocksure or even the investment in it. It's the fact that your specific vulnerability and openness is also present. You never leave one behind. I was watching some of your work just today and yesterday and really sort of marveling at how you're able to present that taking up space, outsized personality, right? This outsized personality and have the humanity and the vulnerability just shine right through. It's rare and it's special. And I think that people pick up on it and respond to it.
Yeah, I would be remiss not to say thanks, because I would hope that that comes across, and it obviously does. And so thank you. I think it's more, it's also about, because as far as being liked, for instance, here's the thing, like, I'm not in it to be liked, okay? Like, I don't care. I do. We all want to be loved, but as far as acting and a character goes, I never reproach a character or anything with the idea of I hope someone likes me. And I've mentioned this before at Comic-Cons, I think, regarding the similarities in my characters, Westworld, Walking Dead, even the video game, the Grand Theft Auto. I'll tell you what, where the similarity is. And I appreciate what you're saying because it is something I do. Just as like you say to a painter, that fucking brushstroke where there's like 6 inches of paint is such a thick gob of acryl, you know, of fucking painting that I recognize. You're like, okay, thanks, because it is a fucking craft that I take seriously. And so when it's recognized, you say, thanks. It's sunshine up the ass feels good. It does not change the way I take a piss in the morning, but it still feels good. So these kind of things, when it comes to these various characters and that vulnerability, because again, if, and the tricky part is like, let's say The Walking Dead, let's say that character of Simon, which also could be said about Rebus, which also could be said about the video game, the unpredictable quality, which to me is also vulnerability. So I'm going to use your term of vulnerability and apply it to my term of unpredictable. Those are the same things, because if you're vulnerable, you're also unpredictable because you don't know what you're going to do. Where that comes from, I'll start with this. Where that comes from is because I don't know where I'm fucking going as an actor on these shows. I don't. I'm not given a season. You know how it works.
Oh,
you get these. You have no fucking clue. Am I here for a week? Because unless you get a series regular role, I've been in the position where I go into these shows as Simon. I thought Simon was the savior, which I, of course, immediately said. So my name is Le Savior. Am I Quebec? Am I French Canadian? My name is Le Savior. No, you're just a savior. So I don't have a name. Okay, cool. So I'm here to introduce Negan. That's my goal. People think I'm Negan. That's the whole thing to my character, as far as I know, right? So I am going to be the one that's going to be, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, here's fucking Oz. That's as far as I knew. That's it. So when I'm doing this, when I have this opportunity, I'm like, as an actor, what can, I don't know his, I, and listen, I love the dramaturg. I love research. I love talking and going and reading and listening and watching. But at the end of the day, does it show up in the performance? It doesn't really matter. Aside from what I try to do is keep as many doors open, which feeds into unpredictable and feeds into vulnerability. Because I don't know if, am I going to be maybe a good guy at the end of the day? Or am I just a bad guy? Or am I a funny guy? Or am I a sarcastic guy? Or am I a this guy? So as an actor, I'm just presenting as many things for the writer's room, not for the audience.
Yeah. Because I find when I come on as a guest star onto a set, you know, people don't realize it's like you're always at someone else's house, right? So depending on when you come in, if you're in the first season or second season, right, things usually are already working and clicking. So I always have a little meditation where I say, my job is to move the story forward. My job is not to make this about me. My job is to, you know, do what they hired me to do. And I know.
I'm sick even saying that. It should be about you. Fuck, that's called exposition. That's Dick Wolf production.
Mm-hmm. And I think that one of my superpowers as an actor is that I take really great direction, right? So, but what that does sometimes is will limit me a little bit in what I might be willing to try, because I want to make sure that I am sort of sometimes fitting into this already well-oiled machine. And I'm really inspired by what you're saying today. I got to say, I don't want to keep using the same words, but I just like it. I like what you're saying, and I like.
Well, I'm not. Again, I think if anything, I just revert back to, you know, even today, or fucking like last night. I think last night I was crying again. Cry a lot. Yeah. I hurt a lot. I'm honestly in pain when I can say I'm in pain most of the time, but it does not stop me from milking the fucking teat out of life. Mm-hmm. And this is the same for acting and for whatever, because listen, I could right now go into a fetal position and start crying. That is me. I've been that way since I was 10. I am just an emotional, raw live wire. It's not enjoyable always. I sometimes wish I could just, you know, just fucking relax, Stephen. I enjoy my life. I enjoy everything, but that doesn't mean I'm in pain. So I just preface that because I certainly don't want, you know, anyone hearing this to think that I live my life with the peacock feathers, because I fucking don't. I am every moment fucking trying to figure this out and trying to be better and working on being better. Human, first and foremost, all of this stuff, a better actor, but it all feeds into the same place for me. It's bettering yourself. Am I better? Honest to fuck, I can't say I am. I have the same fucking shit and hangups that I had years ago. And I fucking hate myself for that. But I'm also not as hateful towards myself as I was, because I can say I'm a good fucking man. I don't kill people. I'm not doing anything super nasty. The nastiest thing I might do is some cursing or get angry or throw something.
Your cruelty is focused inward. I think that is, you know, that is the bane of depression, which, you know, is that we are not, you know, when struggling with depression, generally, you're not being cruel to people outside of you. You turn it inward. And
I do. And I've been mean to people, you know. I don't. Like, yeah. I said, I would talk to you as I talk to, if I like had to call a therapist right now, or I called my mom back. I just say it. And again, it's not always the best way. And
There is no best way. There is no best way. And it's helpful, because I think that when people are suffering with depression, anxiety, I think that it automatically tells you you're alone, which is such a lie.
Yeah, and you're not alone. That's my whole bane of existence with my Instagram, the only social media I do these days, is a lot for that. And I don't engage with people, and it's not because I'm a fucking stuck fit. I use a terrible word a lot, and I just stopped myself, so I'm but you can imagine what it is. I'm not that. It's just I put it on the wall, and really the gist of it all is we're not alone.
We are not.
And I feel how you feel, or worse or better or whatever, but just so you know, we're one.
Do you remember that time that you and I had an accidental date where we both, I think, went to a SAG screening of The Hurt Locker, and we sort of ended up sitting next to each other? I think it was like a New Year's Eve, and we were sitting next to each other in this movie.
Is this when you tell the audience about us sleeping together and getting syphilis or whatever it was that took the next 6 months to clear up?
I remember you said you were going to tell some lies.
No, I don't remember this. What are you talking about? The Hurt Locker?
Yeah, you and I went to a SAG screening, and we both went alone, and we ended up sitting next to each other in like the back row, and it was like a New Year's Eve. And I remember thinking that both of us were having a hard time, and even though we just sat next to each other, I just remember being so comforted that I was sitting next to a friend. We didn't even hang out afterwards. we may have shared some popcorn, but
really,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So amazing. I don't remember. I don't even remember last week. And it's not because I have any sort of substance abuse problem, and I do drugs, and to me, it's been a survival instinct. But I mean, I think that's wonderful, and the great opportunity to announce to the podcastees. Is that what people who listen to the podcast are called? Podcastees?
Yes, that is what they're called. I don't know
that we in fact have a child together lives in Manitoba.
Where's Manitoba?
And is doing great. So everyone, just so everyone knows, they're living in Manitoba, and they're doing great. So.
Okay, good for us. Good for us.
Yes, good for us indeed. Okay, we'll have to stop there now. But for the rest of this wide-ranging and deeply personal interview, you'll have to come back for part two. Be sure to check out Steve in Snowpiercer, which premiered on Sunday, May 17th, and airs weekly on TNT, and his new film, The Short History of the Long Road, coming out June 12th. Steven can also be found on Instagram at @og_Steven.
Thank you for listening. Let's Play was brought to you by The Gamers, a community that connects all gamers who identify as women and welcomes people of all genders who support this. Let's Play was co-produced by Kylie Vernoff, Jenny Grossa, and the Gamers team, Laura Deutsch, Rebecca Dixon, Heather Awida, and me, Verna Maloney. Please visit thegamers.com for show notes, to access exclusive bonus material, and to learn more about the Gamers community. And if you liked what you heard, we'd so appreciate it if you subscribed and gave us a 5-star review. Thanks again for listening.